All right.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call, we love hearing from you at 855-915-WMFO. And now we're talking about perhaps the most extraneous change to something in the world, which is NAFTA is no longer NAFTA.
Right, it's not NAFTA 2 Electric Boogaloo? it's not the new NAFTA?
I would say it's no longer NAFTA.
It's not the NAFTA burner?
Both in name or definition, evidently. Which, a perfect song choice, by the way, Derek. Oh my God, that was fantabulastic. But yeah, so NAFTA, for those of you who don't know, stands for the North American Free Trade Agreement that was signed in 1993. It was state of the art at its time, but the new version is a little different.
Maybe better.
Maybe better, maybe worse.
Well, they changed
time shall tell.
They changed the name, which is always the last refuge of a scoundrel.
Oh, yes.
So we like to point out here. It is now the U.S.
Why do you think I go by Shay?
It's now the USMCA, or the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement.
Which is perhaps the most ironic title of something that comes out of Donald Trump's brain.
There is a Village People song in here somewhere.
USMCA.
I demand a Village People reunion with the original members of the Village People singing this.
Please, because don't tax me on the USMCA.
Because you can, it's pretty easy to do a U.
A U is super easy. It's just holding your arms up in the air.
And everyone knows how to do the S. You know, that's sort of like the walk like an Egyptian thing.
I was going to say, that's definitely a Bengals situation.
USMCA. So, you know, everybody's like, what's in this thing? What's going on? By and large, it is the same as the old NAFTA. But there are some key differences.
Some very key differences.
And credit to the president when credit is due, because he actually did a couple of good things here. The thing that he did, he campaigned on protecting middle class jobs, right? And protecting American workers.
Yes.
And he said NAFTA was a bad deal. We're going to rip it up. We're going to get a better deal. The guy did it. And I think Congress pretty much has to pass this, because there are good things in here. So let me give you the gut, first of all.
The gut.
Current rule under NAFTA says that a car has to be 62.5% manufactured in the United States to avoid tariffs. That kicks up to 75%. So that means more automaking jobs, more parts jobs, more of all that sort of thing.
So that means that my car is a jerk now and your car is very patriotic.
Yeah, it's a it's a significant number. It is a significant number.
It is. But, well, at the same time, though, one has to argue there is a reason that people don't buy domestic on some things. For example, my Toyota was purchased because, or I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. I purchased my Toyota because the general reviews of every car in a similar class favored towards Japanese manufacturing.
Was your Toyota made in Virginia or South Carolina?
That I don't know.
That's where most of the American Toyota actually still imports more cars in the United States than any other car manufacturer, but they're making a lot of stuff here too.
But nonetheless, it's, I mean, a lot of this looks like pushing people to buy domestic, and a lot of things that are domestic are great. Like, even though I'm an Irish person, I like a lot of American beer. Like,
What's going on is most of the big car makers, whether it's Mercedes, BMW, not so much Toyota, but Nissan, they build their cars here now.
Well,
imported. They're foreign car makers but they're not imported cars anymore. Like the stuff that costs you $90,000 at the top of the range, that's imported. That was lovingly handcrafted in Germany. But the low end,
I love that you're like backhand referencing Mercedes.
But the $35,000 Beamer that you're buying, yeah, they built that in Virginia. They built that in Michigan. They built that somewhere in the United States.
I mean, but depending on where you get it, things like that. Like even after 2001. When we all were supposed to boycott various countries, my friend's father wouldn't let me park in front of their house because I drove a Nissan.
Yeah.
And it was because Nissans were partially manufactured in France. That's when we were supposed to start calling them Freedom Fries.
Right.
But I do, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, that this is good for the average American consumer, but at the same time,
the
average American worker, rather. But at the same time, I don't know. There's a reason that every toy I had growing up said made in China on the bottom of it.
Well, this is where number two comes in on the good things. Up to 40% of cars. Now, this does not start at 40%. This escalates to 40% by 2023. Up to 40% of parts and cars sold in the United States must come from a factory that pays at least $16 hourly to its workers.
Can I get that job?
This is a direct shot at Mexico. Because Mexico, as we know, has been luring car manufacturers down there with the promise of cheap labor.
Which is ironic, since he's so angry about people from there trying to come over here.
Now, this is good. This is good for both the United States and Mexico.
Because now Mexico will be required to live up to our standards.
Some of those Mexican factories are going to have to start paying their workers more. Mm-hmm. And Mexican workers making more money means a stronger middle class in Mexico. Fewer jobs, fewer parts going to these low-cost factories means more middle-class jobs here in the United States. And as I've established on this show in the past, the automaker, the person who builds cars, is the prototypical middle-class American worker. Their wages sit right at the median of American wages.
Or at least they should.
They should. Well, they historically have, and they still do.
That's like one of my good friends in LA was from Detroit, and she talked to me about her father and the struggle that he'd been through. Like, it was their whole family, their livelihood was based upon the fact that he was one of the workers at Ford. And when all of that went up, it greatly affected things. But they are, I mean, they're literally getting every American around.
Yeah. So that's another win. We like this. Canada can no longer keep U.S. dairy farmers out of their markets.
That is maybe the cutest part of this.
Canada has to sell American cheese. And Canada also agreed to stop subsidizing its dairy industry.
Uh-huh.
In its export market. This was the most contentious piece of the whole thing.
That's adorable.
Because there's a lot of agriculture in Canada.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, half of Canada's a farm.
And there is a surprisingly high amount of agriculture still in the United States and a lot of dairy farmers. Canada has been cheating on NAFTA for years.
Oh, trust me, I know. Just from driving through Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, the Carolinas, basically the large part of the South. Trust me, I'm aware of how, and not just even the South, like, I mean, in Idaho, Montana, there is a large amount of the country, way bigger than most people know, that farming is how they stay alive.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of my favorite billboards I saw when I was driving across the country was, if you ate three courses today, thank a farmer, because they gave that to you.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I can't tell you how enlightening it was to realize, I mean, you know, you go to Papagino's or something, you don't think about where any of that stuff is coming from.
But we hear about the trade war with China, and we've been hearing about the trade war with China. There has been a very active trade war going between American and Canadian dairy farmers.
Yeah.
For and American and Canadian agricultural producers for 15 years now.
Well, and even closer to home too. Like, I mean, the restaurant that I work for currently, we only locally source. Everything has to come, I believe it's within, it's either 250 or 500 miles. All our cheese comes from Vermont or Maine or Western Massachusetts. And Vermont is right next to Canada. Like, this is not, this isn't just something that the farmers that I was speaking about 2 seconds ago are dealing with. It's people in our own backyard. It's people that share New England with us.
Yeah.
That this is their livelihood that's being threatened or stunted.
And then here's the other thing that I like. I don't know why this is necessary.
I can't wait to hear it based on the smile on your face.
But there's an entire separate letter attached to this. And I will read you some of what it's about. In recognition of their shared commitment to certainty and transparency in trade, the parties, that would be the United States and Mexico, the United States and the United Mexican States, the parties recognize that the following terms are terms used in connection with cheeses from the United, from U.S. producers currently being marketed in Mexico. Mexico confirms that Mexican cheese producers also use these terms. Mexico confirms that market access of U.S. products in Mexico is not restricted due to the mere use of these individual terms. We have an agreement on what we will call cheese with Mexico.
I love how much rigmarole is being caused over cheese.
Now, this is a big deal. This affects...
I know it is, but that's why it's so wonderful.
Here are some of the cheeses affected by this. Brie, Camembert, Cheddar, Chèvre, Colby.
Brie and Chèvre are my two favorites.
Danbo. I don't even know what that is.
Me neither, actually. And I'm a cheese connoisseur.
Emmental, Emmentaler, and Emmenthal.
Ooh, get it.
All Gouda is affected by this. Mm. Parvati, Mascarpone, Monterey Jack.
Oh, Mascarpone, get it. Monterey Jack, yeah.
Mozzarella, Pecorino, Pepper Jack, St. Paulin.
My mouth is literally watering right now.
Samso, Swiss.
I'm not joking. Like, I could... That's my mouth watering.
Tilsiter. So... We have an agreement, in theory, with Mexico.
I love how serious these regulations about cheese.
Over the names of cheese. And thank God, our government has finally done something about the inconsistent cheese labeling between the United States and Mexico.
Well, do you know what's funny? Like, even when I lived in Italy, I never really got homesick, but sometimes I would just be like, I need something familiar. So I'd go to the grocery store and I'd say to someone that works there, do you have American cheese? And they'd be like, I don't know what you mean. Yeah. I'd be like, no, like, so it's sliced and,
it's not really cheese.
It's very simple.
It's not really cheese.
It's, they said, oh, mozzarella. And I'm like, no, not mozzarella. It's like, it's standard. It's not cheese. Like, it's like if cheese just had no definition whatsoever, like other than that it is essentially cheese. And then finally I led them to the dairy dial and I was like this and pointed to the only kind of American cheese they had was Kraft Singles and the plastic around it and all. And they looked and they looked just like, oh. And then would just look at me very judgmentally.
Yeah, well, they should. That's the Americanness of the American cheeses. It's terrible. It's terrible.
Every once in a while, though, an American girl wants an American grilled cheese, you know?
Here's the bad stuff. Big Pharma. It gets a gimme in this. Canada.
Of course they do.
Canada will give up protections that would have allowed them to develop drugs similar to drugs manufactured in the United States. So basically, Canada is going to respect patents on U.S. medicines, which means everybody's going to pay more for their drugs. Not good. The other one is Disney gets a gimme out of this. Canada. Primarily, Mexico as well, but primarily Canada, will now respect 70-year copyright. The only ones who want 70-year copyright, copyright used to be lifetime plus 30, which was reasonable. Now it is 70 years. Why? So that Disney can continue to control Mickey Mouse. So that no one else can ever use Mickey Mouse for anything. This nonsense has to stop.
This is... This is the most hilarious bill that I've ever heard of being presented in all of my studies of American
history. Not if you're Disney or GlaxoSmithKline.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, we're talking about a huge change to a huge organization in the United States.
It's mostly about cheese and Mickey Mouse.
I was going to say, and for the last 5 minutes, we've been talking about cheese and Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, that's these are big issues.
I mean, to me, they are. These are big issues. Should they be to our government?
The other thing that's bad in this is that it sunsets after 16 years. And it's like, what? Can we get a longer term agreement than this? Why are you pulling the plug on this in 16 years? You know why? So that Disney can get another copyright extension in there. And maybe we'll have some new kinds of cheese.
Yeah, maybe by the time they thaw out Walt,
you'll
be able to put some 2 cents.
Now, the critics are running around saying this is going to make cars cost more. And you know what? Maybe it will. But here's something that we need to get used to as a nation, okay? The real price of an automobile has not kept pace with an inflation.
It's true.
If you buy a car today, it actually costs less than it did if you bought a car 20 years ago or 10 years ago. Because car prices stay the same year over year as our currency becomes worth less and less year over year. So we can afford a little bit more in car prices. But underneath this is what matters. We as Americans should be more than willing to pay more for products made by people who earn a living wage.
Well, and I absolutely agree. And it's the same argument that I always have for legalizing marijuana, which is that, and a lot of people who argue against that are worried that, oh, well, if I meet a guy on the corner, it's going to cost less than if I purchase it in a store that is being regulated.
Well, if you're in Colorado.
Taxed, first of all, the price is not that much higher. Second of all, the product is better.
In Colorado, it's 40% higher because of the taxes.
No, but still, like, honestly, the quality matches what I used to pay in New York City buying it off a guy I had class with. Like, I can get an eighth of sour diesel in Colorado for the same price that I used to buy it off someone in the Bronx. But the important thing, it's the same sort of concept where the important thing to think about is that now it's being taxed, which means that, and you know what those taxes do? They go right back into making our lives as Americans better.
Yes.
Theoretically,
yeah.
Not always, but theoretically, they go towards public funding for things like schools, roads, the fire department, the police department. And I know everyone's all mad at the police, but there are some good ones out there. And
trust me, it'd be madder if there were no police.
Precisely. And that's the thing, is that it's one of my favorite expressions is the juice worth the squeeze?
Yeah.
And in this case, in terms of taxing things higher or things becoming a bit more expensive because they're benefiting our country as a whole, it is.
If you buy products that help your fellow American have a better quality of life, you will have a better quality of life
exactly.
as well.
Exactly.
And that is a fundamental truth that you can take to the bank. 855-915-9636. We are The Big Picture on the Town with Mikey D, coming your way at 9 o'clock tonight with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 remains the telephone number. When we come back, President Trump, Brett Kavanaugh.
I still refuse to call him that.
It's been a week.
He's Donald Trump.
It's been a week. And October isn't scary enough. We need this nonsense going on. We'll get into all the finer points right after this here on WMFO Medford.
Red Lee. When was the last time you were scared out of your wits by a movie? Halloween, the motion picture about the most terrifying night of the year. Halloween, the night three teenage girls discover the real trick is to stay alive.
Tommy, it's me!
Halloween, the night he came home. From Compass International Pictures, rated R.
Everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. And Prince, obviously.
George Michael, thank
this
you.
This is George Michael? Oh, this is George Michael. Oh, I'm embarrassed.
Six.
Well, you can call in and yell at me for making a huge mistake about who sings the song at 855-915-WMFO. You can also call in and talk to us about what we're talking about, which currently... is what everyone's talking about, if we're going to be frank.
This is wildly inappropriate to be playing on this topic.
I know. I think that's what threw me off.
Yeah.
But, yes, so we're discussing what everyone's discussing, which is the Senate hearings.
All right, so let me...
of one Brett Kavanaugh.
Let me start with last week. Shay, did you watch any of the testimony?
I did. Well, that's what's interesting, is I did... I was working doubles both days of, like, the major amounts of testimony, which, of course, was both the woman accusing Kavanaugh and Kavanaugh himself. But it was strange because, so, like, I was able to watch it live with subtitles above the bar of my restaurant, and then got to see highlights after I get out of work.
Yeah. I actually watched it live. You know, I had it streaming in the office, so I got to see the whole thing. So, Dr. Ford, credible?
I think so.
I think so as well. I think her recollections of what happened that day are incredibly vivid. And we could talk. There were things about her testimony that I didn't care for. You know, I don't need all of the anatomical terms for how the human memory works.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about, you know, she was too afraid to fly out to Washington, because she has a fear of flying, yet she flies all over the world on vacation. That becomes an issue.
I was going to say, she definitely leaned into the situation she currently finds herself in. I am not denying that by any means. But... As someone who's been sexually assaulted, I can understand it. If I was forced to talk about it, and not that she was forced, I mean, she came forward voluntarily, but at the same time, if I had to talk about it, even, you know, that happened to me over a decade ago.
Yeah.
even years and years later, if I was forced to talk about it, I know that, I mean, I've flown all over the world as well. That would be the most nerve-wracking flight of my entire life. And I can't say that I wouldn't lean into how terrible what happened to me was.
Apparently, her lawyer did not tell her that Congress would have been more than happy to talk to her on the phone or arrange a meeting out there.
Either,
which, this would be the lawyer that Dianne Feinstein told her to hire. So, you know, in spite of all of that, she still came off as very credible, you know, and
at the end of the
and
day,
very sincere.
At the end of the day, I could see, like, if you look back to what happened with Clinton, the women that came forward about him, and I'm not saying that they were lying either, but the women that came forward about him and that spoke about Bill Clinton had something to considerable to gain from coming forward, from him being found guilty, from anything. This woman, she's a college professor. She, literally the only thing that she has to gain from saying any of this is vindication.
No.
In my opinion, yes.
No. Maybe no.
Or maybe publicity. Or maybe hopping onto this Me Too movement. But at the same time,
You're missing.
What am I missing?
You're missing what she potentially has to gain and why Dianne Feinstein is involved in this. And I bring this up only because this is sort of a larger, it's the big picture in this.
Name drop. Or title of show drop.
If she sincerely believes, as a lot of as the Democrats have tried to convince people, that Brett Kavanaugh is the greatest evil ever to be unleashed on the Supreme Court, and that millions of women are going to die if he is confirmed, then she has everything to gain by coming forward and stopping him in his tracks.
See, I don't.
Is that not true?
That is okay. If you put it in the way that you just structured it, yes, that's true. But I think, or at least I hope, that she decided to come forward for the same reason that if my attacker, I hadn't found out he was in jail, that I may. Which is, number one, for vindication, like I said. Number two, for the reasons I have been talking about for the past couple weeks on this show, that I don't want Kavanaugh to be on the Supreme Court. Which is, so it has nothing to do, I argued with somebody about this the other day, and they finally actually conceded. It has nothing to do with him getting prosecuted or not, though I was speaking to my brother about, I didn't even realize that the statute of limitations in Maryland does not exist, meaning that he could actually be criminally prosecuted.
She go file charges tomorrow.
But in terms of why I believe she came forward and why this is happening, him being criminally prosecuted is neither here nor there. It's more about what I've been speaking about since the story broke, which is that the Supreme Court, they legalized abortion. They desegregated schools. They decided.
I want to get into those topics another time and stay strictly on Kavanaugh.
No. But my point being, they make very, 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 very important decisions about very, very important things.
Yes.
And I do not trust someone who, even if her story is a bit exaggerated, even if it wasn't him and he just allowed this behavior to happen, I don't want that person making decisions as big as legalizing abortion or desegregating schools or whatever the next huge Supreme Court case to come up is.
And here we go.
To be his responsibility.
You've just led back to the point that I made, which is, what does she have to gain in doing this?
I meant that she has nothing to selfishly gain.
No, but
she has, what she has to gain is why I believe she came forward in the first place, is to stand up for a woman like her and to stop someone who is not qualified to make those kinds of decisions from being in my opinion, from holding one of the biggest honors in our country,
and that,
even bigger than presidency.
And that is, your perspective is one perspective. In the interest of considering everything, I've got another one to lay out there for you. That she actually does have something big to gain in this if she stops Brett Kavanaugh. If she's that opposed to this guy.
You're saying something selfish to gain.
And I'm saying something selfless to gain. You know, it's...
No,
it's,
that's... No, and I'm sorry, I just misspoke.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously she has something to gain because she has something to gain for all women, for all citizens. But I don't think that there's... What I meant when I said that is that it's not like...
I'm not trying to trap you here, by
not,
the way.
No, I'm just saying it's not like, okay, I'll give like the grossest example ever. When Kim Kardashian made a sex tape with Ray J and it got leaked, what she had to gain from that was becoming famous.
Quote unquote leaked. Yeah.
I don't exactly quote unquote leaked. I don't think that this is a woman who is trying to get fame or notoriety or anything politically or professionally gained by coming forward with this.
But we can't rule that out. And if he doesn't get nominated, her name goes in the history books. So, now.
That is true.
Let me go to the next question. Did you find Brett Kavanaugh credible?
No.
Really?
I found... what's that Shakespeare quote? Methinks thou doth protest too much.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that entirely, and I found Brett Kavanaugh to be incredibly...
I thought he was very convincing for someone who hasn't grown up around lawyers and trials and seeing when someone is full of it.
Right. Well, you and I both know the language, and we both know the, you know, but his opening statement was riveting, and to me, you know, the money shot... I really shouldn't be using that.
I was going to say, are we allowed to say that on the radio?
The turning point for that.
I'm covering my mouth right now.
The turning point for that, for me, came at the very end of his testimony when he was being questioned by Senator Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And Senator Kennedy asked him, you know, did you do this?
Which has some irony in and of itself.
Did you do this? No. Do you have even a scintilla of doubt about this? Not even a scintilla. Do you swear to God and your family? I swear to God and my family. And you had to see it live. You have to see the eye contact between these two guys. Because Kennedy clearly does not believe him.
To be frank, though, I don't mean to sound like a terrible person, but it's less difficult than the average person thinks to lie to someone's face, even under oath. I mean, if I had to recount all the times I lied to my parents, sorry, Mom, I know you're listening, but all the times I had to lie to my parents when I was in high school, I mean, I should win an Oscar. What's more important to me is the sheer fact of how maybe he did look super convincing during those last few minutes, but the sheer fact of the expressions that he made over the course of all of this, the facial expressions, I mean, the how angry and defensive he got. Someone who has nothing to hide, someone who's innocent, will just sit there and say, I don't even know why this is happening.
Not true.
They're not going to...
Because this isn't even a...
Some of the faces he made, I almost wanted to, like, reach through the television and give him a tissue.
This isn't even a question of guilt or innocence. This is a question of what's been done to the man. And what's been done to the man is...
What about what's been done to her?
This is a bigger question. Because that question still remains of whether or not anything was done to her.
What's been done to him? Do you know... Okay. Do you know how many guys like him I knew in high school and college?
But hang on a second. This is where the separation exists, okay? We don't know that Brett Kavanaugh is guilty of anything.
We don't.
There has been no trial. There has been no formal investigation. A woman came out and said, he tried to rape me. And he was immediately convicted by the public. And now everything that he's done and everything that he says, for those who have already convicted him in their minds falls into this convenient space of, well, that's what guilty people do, and that's how guilty people act. You've already set up your own narrative. You've already made up your own mind.
But
you've already closed off any possibility that he could be innocent.
But the most important point here, I'm sorry, the two most important points here is, number one, like I said, I've known many men like him over the course of my life.
Let me qualify this statement that you're making. You have, and you don't have to tell me what it is. I just want a yes or no answer. You have a general opinion of that type of man. Yes or no?
I don't think opinion is the proper term to use. I think a general impression based on experience.
Okay. Go forth.
Secondly, whether or not he is guilty of what she says, whether or not he is guilty of anything, the most important factor in this case, in this hearing, in this whatever you'd like to call it, is how easy it was for people to believe that this was true. Whether or not it's true is honestly, at this point, not completely moot, but nearly so. The important thing
is... I agree with you on that 100%. I do, yeah.
There are thousands, millions of men that if someone said that about them, I would say, not possible.
Yeah.
Couldn't be true. Absolutely could not be true. The fact that it was so easy to believe this speaks higher volumes than any testimony, than anything else that may take course over the course of these hearings. That is the most important factor here, is how easy it was to believe.
I think...
And again, I'm not... And this is coming from the standpoint that I already put forth, that I'm not even talking about any sort of criminal prosecution.
Right.
I'm talking about him holding the court, and I'm calling it the court because it's basically American royalty of being a Supreme Court justice.
I will say that I agree with your statement. I don't think it's universally true, but I think there are a number of people in this country who look at Brett Kavanaugh and immediately stories like this come out, they're like, they're nodding their heads and they're like, yeah, we know the type. We know who those guys are. And he may or may not be that guy. From my end, trying to keep an open mind about this and trying to, because I process everything logically and not emotionally, I do. As you know that about me by now.
What are you trying to say about me, D?
No. 99% of people on the planet process things emotionally. 99%.
And I like to say mine's emotion spiked with logic.
Yeah. I go logic first and emotion second. It was something I was taught to do when I was very young because I tend to be an emotional person. Yeah, just a little. What I saw out of Brett Kavanaugh on Thursday in his opening remarks, which I thought were powerful, one of the most powerful, like United States history is right there in front of you. And it is rarely that compelling to watch. I saw myself. If anybody ever came out against me with unwarranted, untrue accusations, you better believe I'm coming back with a double-barreled, full-throated response on that. This is a man who was defending his wife, defending his children, defending his parents, defending everything that he's done in his life. Now, at the same time, that does not necessarily deal with the question, and we never really got to the question of, did you try and take Dr. Ford's clothes off when she was 15? Nobody's asking that.
Well, and part of, that's the point that I wanted to make as well, is that part of where I believe his anger comes from, assuming, and I'm not saying I am assuming, but theoretically thinking that he is guilty of this, is that, like I said, I knew guys like this when I was a teenager. The rich, I play varsity everything. I have a cool house where I throw cool parties.
Chads, as the incels call them.
Yes. Most of them are now married with kids, holding down good careers, living in similar houses to those awesome houses they threw parties in high school. Most of them have also never been held accountable for things they pulled in high school and college.
Right.
largely because they never thought they'd have to. So the anger that he's showing, while it could be out of him being angry about being accused of something that he did not do, could also very much as easily be because he never thought he'd be held accountable. Because he can't believe that 30 years later, he actually has to answer for these things that once he went to grad school, he thought to himself, oh, well, that was a stupid thing that I did. But whatever, I had a sense of entitlement. This is never going to chase me into my adulthood.
I'm going to give you a slightly different take on it, because this is the way I look at it. I think there are two possibilities. One is that he's innocent. One is that this did not happen. He's been wrongfully accused, and he is defending himself. The other one is, there's a second possibility, which is this happened, and he was so drunk he doesn't remember it.
I think that my interpretation is also the same. Maybe not even that he doesn't remember it, but maybe he was so drunk that he remembered, like the next day he woke up and was like, ooh, shoot, I shouldn't have done that. This doesn't follow me.
I don't think he remembers it at all.
I've done some dumb stuff when I was drunk as a teenager.
The third possibility, which you could very easily read into his testimony and his performance, if you want to call it that, last Friday. The third possibility.
I'd like to thank the Academy.
And this is the one that, you know, when I think about this, it skeeves me out, and I think it should skeeve anybody out who's looking at this, is that in his mind, what he did is no big deal. Not that it shouldn't have followed him, but that I didn't rape anybody. What's the big deal? Why are you coming after me? Why are you attacking me because I tried to take a girl's clothes off? That's what teenage boys do.
Well, that kind of ties in with my interpretation of things.
Yeah.
Is that he...
Mine's worse.
I was going to say yours is worse, but he never thought that he'd be held accountable for this.
Mine's worse. I know I did it, but so what?
Even once people found out that wasn't something that should be allowed.
Yeah.
There was someone wrote, I forget which website it was on, but someone wrote a really strong article about 80s rape culture. And it was basically 80s rape culture as explained by the movie 16 Candles. And it makes a very good point of that. I mean, even when you watch television shows from like the early 90s, there are things that are on them that would never fly today.
It's because millennials ruined everything.
Oh, shut up and never call me a millennial again. I was born in 86. They define millennial as 87 onward.
I didn't call you a millennial. I said millennials ruined everything.
You call me a millennial
and
all the time.
And you took offense to it. That makes you a millennial.
You call me a millennial all the time.
You are a millennial.
Shut up. But there are things that it just, I mean, even some of like the connotations on like I binge watch Friends sometimes, like to be nostalgic. Some of the connotations, both in terms of people's race, people's sexual orientation, that are meant to be harmless, are things that wouldn't fly now. And it kind of speaks to this case in that, not that it was ever actually okay, but that sort of behavior from a rich, athletic, smart, accomplished, going places guy was in that era just kind of deemed as acceptable.
Don't have sex in high school, kids. That's what we're saying. Don't have sex in high school.
Especially in the back of a Nissan Maxima, especially when you're 6 feet tall.
Should he be confirmed? Brett Kavanaugh.
Confirmed as a justice? No.
Why?
Everything I've already said.
Okay.
I don't know that he should be prosecuted. I don't think that there's enough.
No, I don't think he should be.
I don't think there's enough evidence for that. But I also think that my large point in this is that it was way too easy to believe that all of this was true. And that doesn't mean that he shouldn't be allowed to be a lawyer. That doesn't mean necessarily mean that he shouldn't be allowed to be a lawyer. That doesn't necessarily mean that he shouldn't be allowed to be a judge. It means that he shouldn't hold the position in our country that makes groundbreaking, going to change the rest of the course of this nation laws.
I'm going to agree with you, but for a different set of reasons.
I'd expect nothing less, Steve.
Well, I mean, I think enough questions have been raised about Brett Kavanaugh's relationship with alcohol through, you know, setting aside whether or not these sexual assaults happened. We have a very consistent picture of a guy who's been drinking since he was a teenager, drinks a lot, gets into bar fights. Okay.
Cute.
Where people are hurt. Is alleged to have been blackout drunk by numerous people who knew him in college.
Again, saying that that's why all of this was so easy to believe.
The phrase sober as a judge keeps coming to my mind over and over and over again.
Oh my God, that's so poetic and beautiful.
And I got to look at this and whether or not the allegations from Blasey Ford are true, whether or not the allegations from Deborah Ramirez are true, whether or not anyone believes them, there is enough smoke around the alcohol question that there is definitely fire there. And I have to believe that we can find somebody and nominate somebody who is not under this cloud of suspicion of wild drunken antics. And a more even temperament than we've experienced from Judge Kavanaugh.
Well, and to bring it into, even though I still maintain that I don't know if this is grounds to criminally prosecute him, it should be taken into consideration the way our justice system works, especially given what he's trying to get a seat for, is that someone has to be proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. I think there's
more than reasonable doubt. Yes,
there's a great deal of reasonable doubt
that this guy's
about
a bad
him
drunk.
Being innocent. Yeah.
At the very least, that he's a bad drunk.
I'm not saying, that's the thing, is there is at least, we are beyond reasonable doubt in terms of, if nothing else, the fact that he is not fit to be a Supreme Court justice.
President Trump needs to withdraw this nomination right now.
Yep.
Or as soon as the FBI report comes in, because the worst thing that the president can do right now is leave it to the Senate to fall on their swords a month ahead of the midterms and have to vote on this. If you value your party, I know it's not your party, but if you value the party you're affiliated with, Mr. President, and you value the concept of getting anything accomplished in your second term in office, withdraw the Kavanaugh nomination and withdraw it immediately.
Hear, hear.
On the Tell Mikey D coming your way at 9 o'clock. When we come back, our favorite things from the past week and the strangest things from the past week here on WMFO Medford.
Mm-hmm. But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So who's going to do what? Anyone?
Yeah,
okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So, who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So, we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we're living our dreams.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane, and with me, as always, is the illustrious Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. And we're going to wrap things up with two of our favorite segments, starting with What's Hot, which is the coolest thing from this or the past or the coming week. For me, one of my best friends has lupus, and this piqued my interest accordingly. There's a lupus medical and educational symposium this Saturday at Beth Israel, and that's in the Leventhal conference room. It includes free admission and lunch, so even if you don't care about lupus, you can go get fed. You do have to register beforehand. You can do so if you call 877-NO-LUPUS or go to lupusne, as in New England, .org.
Nice. What's that URL once again?
It's lupusne, so N-E is in New England. So the word lupus, L-U-P-U-S-N-E .org.
Nice. It is October. It is Halloween. It is time to watch scary movies.
Tis.
And there are a few choice cuts that you might want to check out on your streaming services. I've picked a couple for the three majors. If you have Netflix, Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
Oh, of course.
You only watch one horror movie this month.
Wait, The Shining's on Netflix right now?
Yes.
Oh, get it. I know what I'm doing after the show.
You only watch one horror movie on streaming this month. Watch The Shining. But they also have brought back Train to Busan.
I've never seen that, and I'm a Netflix horror movie nerd.
There's an English language remake in the works, but I strongly, strongly suggest you check this out. This was a huge hit over in South Korea. It's a film about a bunch of people on a train trying to escape a zombie zone. And it is fantastic. It is an amazing movie.
I would say, honestly, Eastern Asian cinema is amazing. If you haven't seen Battle Royale,
oh yeah,
that movie is dope.
If you liked Battle Royale, you will definitely enjoy Train to Busan. Over on Hulu, David Cronenberg's The Fly. Not only is a great jumping off point for Cronenberg, but it's also got Jeff Goldblum in it.
Which, who doesn't love Jeff Goldblum doing something exciting? Like, that's like the reason we watch him.
Amazing effects. This is David Cronenberg's body horror rewrit as summer blockbuster movie, which this was. Highly recommended. Also, if you're in a quieter, more introspective mood, the original Swedish version of Let the Right One In is running on Hulu right now.
I would say, oh yes, I watched that.
Vampire movie.
It's good.
And it's about two kids.
I would say it's like a pretty touching vampire movie.
One of whom may or may not be a vampire, but one of the great things about this movie is the way it uses the dark, cold, dreary Swedish winter as sort of an oppressive force throughout.
Oh, absolutely. I'd say that that's actually the scariest aspect of the movie.
Finally, if you've got Amazon Prime, I cannot believe that they're actually streaming this. Nightmare City is an Umberto Lenzi zombie movie. This is the guy that made Cannibal Ferox and some of the most infamous Italian cannibal movies. Nightmare City is his take on the zombie film. It's not a good movie, but it's a great period piece and great Italian zombie cinema. The highlight of this movie is zombies attack a television studio while a bunch of women are doing an aerobics program.
I think you might be the first person ever to say the phrase, great Italian zombie cinema.
Oh, there's a lot of great Italian zombie cinema. You've got to check this out. Nightmare City, Umberto Lenzi. Grab some beers, watch it with your friends. You will have a blast.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at The Big Picture, and we're going to let you go with That's a Thing That Happened, which is the craziest story from last week. And for me, a Bronx charter school teacher recruited a student to help him score $4,000 worth of marijuana and then beat him senseless when he found out the kid pocketed the cash. Kevin Pope, 48, also stole the teen's iPhone and wallet and threatened to sexual assault his mother if he didn't get the money back. Pope, who was a science teacher at John V. Lindsay Wildcat Academy in Hunts Point, was arrested at the school and charged with assault and robbery in the attack the day earlier. Pope had asked students around the school back in June if they knew a drug dealer, and they put him in touch with the teen, who promised he could score a large stash of drugs from his contact in Manhattan. Pope gave the kid $4,000 for the hefty purchase. The unidentified teen told cops he met the dealer near Central Park and was told that the quantity of the drugs he was seeking cost $7,000, and then blew off the transaction and spent the money. 3 months later, shortly after the start
of the
new... That's
not how drug buying works, by
the way. Shortly after the start of the new school year, Pope found the teen about two blocks from the Lafayette Avenue school and demanded that the money be returned. When the student said it was gone, Pope allegedly socked him in the face multiple times and took his iPhone 6, gold chain, and wallet containing the boy's school ID and two Metro cards. A source said that Pope, quote, threatened to have him beaten up again and have his mother sexually assaulted if he didn't see the money in a month.
Yikes.
Oh.
New Zealand. Kayaker Kyle Munder learned the hard way to stay away from the seals while